a while ago, you said that it sounded like you had some kind of a moral crisis about the amount of money that was being spent. Talk to me about that.
Well, I did, and I kind of still do. I guess I have to digress a little and say that I know now that there's people around. I've heard that there's a motion on some faculty committee or something to move FD to spring break or something like that. And some people on in the campus community view FD as this kind of dead span of 3 or 4 days in an academic year when you can't do anything in class because everybody's at FD and they're all drinking in preparation for FD. And I think FD is, like I say, one of the greatest traditions that the school has going for it, especially in the social aspect. And I hope they don't go change anything that'll kill off FD. So, I mean, I hope FD continues, you know, in the tradition it has been in the past few years of this big, you know, this big extravagant event. But at the same time, this big extravagant event cost an awful lot of money for a four-hour, you know, a 3 or 4 hour ball. And so there's a kind of that dichotomy there that you want this big event that everybody loves, but I feel guilty about, I always felt guilty about having this kind of money. And it stems from the fact, I think, the realization anyway, it stems from the fact that Leo and I also, and the other guy, I shouldn't just say Leo and I because it make it sound like it was, you know, Leo and I, nobody else, but it was, you know, just Leo and I used to do all this together and everything from build FD to, you know, everything else. And we often also built for Habitat for Humanity on Saturdays. We used to go over to BV and build for Habitat on Saturdays. And now, in our senior year, I wasn't very involved in it, but Leo was very involved in getting a Habitat house built in Lexington here. He and another girl put this together, and they pretty much built the house with a crew of people. And now that's apparently a pretty strong tradition. But when you go work on a Habitat house and you see these guys are building houses for homeless or needy people for $20,000, and you turn right around on Saturday afternoon after you've finished, you know, hanging vinyl siding for these people, you turn around and you go over to work on the big gym and you're blowing $70,000 for a 4 hour party where, you know, 75% of people have had too much wine before they've gotten there anyway. It just seems like this. I just always felt a little guilty about it. All this lumber we used to get. You know, we go out and get lumber by the pickup truck full, and just paper and all this stuff, and all this just stuff, this decoration stuff, $25,000, $30,000 worth of wood and construction and decoration materials alone. We used to go out and get this stuff, and then we'd use it and essentially dispose of it. And so that, I always kind of felt a little bad about that, but I think it's well worth it, and the students continue to, you know, buy the tickets, and so, you know, as long as people continue to come, I don't think there's anything really too wrong with it. And we always gave this stuff to the high schools and the theater departments anyway. And I've heard that the Rockridge County High School prom happens to be the same theme as FD, you know, in the spring. They just use our decorations, and I think, you know, that's probably, there's a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, I was talking to some of the guys this weekend, some of the lighting guys, some of the security guards and that. And like the year that we did the Paris theme, we built a bunch of benches. Like we built 6 benches. You know, pretty, you know, they're not Southern Living type benches, but they're not bad, you know. And those things are still floating around on guys' porches. And then another guy was telling us that some of the stairs we built a few years ago for like the garden platform or whatever, he was using them in his house now. And these other guys take our lumber and they, you know, some of these guys build extensions onto their houses with it. You know, one of the guys there was telling me he's got a stack of this stuff and he's getting ready to use it to build onto his house. And so, you know, in that sense, it's not like it's just going in a landfill somewhere, but it is, you know, it is a lot of money for I mean, it's certainly the most expensive 4 hour event I've ever been to. You know.
I have a friend who's an art teacher out at the high school, and I can tell you that you make a huge contribution out there. Have you all ever gone out to prom to see what they do?
I never went out, and I guess now I wish I had, but...
It's It's a pretty big contribution to the community. Well,
that makes me feel good that we do that. And we try to get all our stuff locally. We have our T-shirts printed locally. We buy lumber from lumber yards locally. And I don't think that's really that big deal. It's not like we're infusing this much of cash, because $5,000 at a lumber yard is small change for them when they're in the business of building houses. But all the same, these guys at the theater and the high school, it makes me feel good to know that they're getting stuff. And when I was the chairman, we sent letters out to these different high schools, their art departments, and said, we're having this ball, this is our theme. And what I said was, send a postmarked letter back to my mailbox if you want any parts of this. And then in the order I got these letters, I made appointments with them, and I said, okay, you can come in. And I said, well, what do you want? And they said, well, we want this and this. And they wrote that down, put their names on it. So they come in here Saturday morning at 6 a.m. with their students and their crowbars, and they take it with them, and everybody kind of gets what they want, and they can use this and that. And, I'm glad that happens. And we also reuse some stuff from year to year, but not a lot. But we try to do some of that. But it all cuts down on that, I guess, the waste aspect.
You've mentioned the auditor a number of times. Mm-hmm. What's the role of the auditor?
The auditor is the one that controls all the bucks. And the whole ball, it's really funny how this works. The whole ball is funded off of ticket sales and memorabilia sales. But of course, we start spending money in October and we don't realize one penny of income. Well, outside for ads from the playbill, I should say. We always try to make the playbill self-sufficient. So the playbill, we sell enough ads to get the playbill done. Other than that, everything comes from these ticket sales, and we start spending money in October or November, and we don't see any money come back in until a week before the ball. And so the school is always, essentially what they do is they just give us an interest-free loan. They just cover all our costs for us, and then we just pay them back when we get it in. So that is an absolutely critical element. I mean, the financing of this ball is, the university is very generous and helpful. And without that help, we'd never be able to, we'd never do this, because we'd have to have some way of getting, buying the stuff. I guess we could buy it on credit, but we'd do it from the school. And the EC, and one of the big problems with the ball is, well, you set this kind of budget. We say the budget's going to be $75,000 and tickets are going to cost $45 a pop and T-shirts and that are going to cost this. And we always, we have to think, well, how many tickets are we going to be able to sell? And so, we say, well, we got this budget of $75,000 or whatever. But in actuality, we don't have that cash. That's just what we hope to raise. So it's always just kind of gamble. And the university helps us out in the bad years, and then I guess they get the extra cash in the good years. But there's a lot of events, like if people don't like the theme or if the weather's bad or something like that, then ticket sales can be off somewhat. And that happened the year when we did Paris. We actually wound up being something under budget, a couple $1,000s under our budget, but our revenues were well underneath of what we were projected, so we wound up being about $3,000 in a hole. And EC has bailed us out. They essentially just said, okay, here's $3,000. Go pay your bills, which,
Why do you think, when you had such a wonderful theme, why do you think you...
Well, a lot of people talk about the weather was bad that year, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, because there are some people that come in from, outside the area, but there aren't very many. I mean, I don't think, whether there's a little bit of snow on the ground or not is going to, influence somebody's decision whether or not they want to walk 4 blocks to the ball. I don't think that's big. I think a lot of it involves the hype of the ball, and that's kind of the thing about the ball I've never really been able to understand, is what drives people to the ball, and why do some come and why do some not. Most everybody seems to come, but not everybody does. But the auditor, anyway, controls all this funding, and it's a big, big, big job, because we've got all these chairmen running around, these guys ordering lumber, the ladies are ordering paper and ordering T-shirts, and we've got all these different accounts at lumber yards and Walmarts and mail order stores and, sportswear stores for the T-shirts and hardware stores. And the auditor has to just manage all this, all this financial information. It's a big, big job. And it's one that has to be done, pretty well. They had some big problem with this is another rumor that I've heard. But they had some big problems with the funding, I think, the year before I got here, which would have been with the ball in 1991. And what happened is there was just a lot of waste, and they went $100,000 over budget or something, or some massive total, and they took everybody out to the Wilson Walker House for dinner, and they ran out these big tabs, and the chairman quit 3 weeks before the ball, and it was some kind of scandal. I don't know how much. There is some truth to that. I don't know how much. But, so, you know, we have to, after that, I think, well, I don't know if that was, I don't know how, what changed after that, because I wasn't around to see what it was like beforehand. But, you know, that just emphasizes how important the auditor's position is, because without somebody to really manage this, you know, you can just go bonkers. Because, you know, even the auditor doesn't really know how much is being spent until the bills come in, because, you know, you got 8 people charged and stuff. Some of them forget to bring in receipts, some of them don't. And then if 3 people go buy something all at the same time, then, you know, each one of those doesn't bust over the budget. But when you put them all 3 together, you know, the auditor really has to just do the best he or she can to, you know, control it. But it's a pretty big job, and it's certainly one I would not want, and one that I don't think I could do a good job of.
So what was the theme that went so far over budget?
I think that must have been the King Arthur's Court theme. I think that was the theme in 1991. Like I say, that was the year I was still in high school. I didn't get to that one. But it was King Arthur's Court, and apparently the decorations were really good. And I don't think they went over budget. I think they went over budget because of the Wilson Walker House type of thing, as opposed to the decorations. But I don't really know.
I've heard about that I'd love to know more about is the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about?
No, that was 1988. Richard Weaver is the man that knows the history better than anybody else.
Yeah, I know.
Because he's the one that, yeah.
But do you know, I've heard they brought in a railroad car?
I don't know about that.
Apparently they brought in a railroad car, and I've always been dying to know how they did that.
Yeah.
Okay, but you don't know.
They might
about
have put
that.
It on the front porch. The year we did the magic carpet ride, we got a camel from the Natural Bridge Zoo. We had a camel out there on the entrance. But, you know, there are always some tacit rules. There's always some rules that the gym lays down, like no water in the gym. And I think I know that there's no live animals in the gym. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how they did that railroad. I'd never heard of the railroad car. I wouldn't be surprised if they did it.
Oh, I heard that, and that people were going in and getting their pictures taken inside the railroad cars.
That's fascinating, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just have a few more questions. You know that the origins of the fancy dress ball was really fancy dress, that people wore costumes.
Right.
Was there ever, in all your time, ever any talk about going back to costumes?
There was. There was big talk about that in for the 1994 ball. The magic carpet theme. There was talk about that, and we talked about it on the committee for a while. You know, we want to do this, but I think it didn't pan out because people would think, well, some will come in costumes and some won't, and that won't be that cool. And you know, people maybe don't want to spend all the money to put together a costume. And there's only so many, you know, pre-made costumes out there that, you know, you can get. And there's so many people that want to go to the ball that you can have a lot of duplication. I mean, I don't know why that's a problem, because it's not like every guy just wears a black tie to the thing. You know, you could do just all photocopies of everybody pretty much. But still, there was talk of that. Costume 1 year, and I don't know why it didn't pan out, but probably Monica Robinson knows. She was the chairman that year. She probably has a good idea why that didn't work.
Well, I'm lobbying hard for doing it in 1999 for the 250th anniversary.
It would definitely be neat to have. And
well, the pictures of those years when everybody was in costumes, yeah. Just marvelous.
I bet that'd be neat. If it turns out that they do it, I'd like to come and see. But even if everybody just kind of wore a mask or something over a tux, that would really be neat.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That would certainly seem to be manageable.
Yeah.
Well, you have done a marvelous job of explaining fancy dress. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you think we should?
Well, I guess the only thing I really wanted to make sure I said was inserting that business about how I think it's such a great, you know, tradition, and this deal about how it unifies everybody. And I think I got that stuck in somewhere. And that was really, I mean, coming in here, that was really the what I wanted to emphasize. Because I think for people like me who have done a lot of this and seen the specs on, I think a lot of times we miss the forest for the trees. We get so tied up in what's in this corner and what was in the big gym and what was in the small gym that we sometimes lose sight of the grander scheme or the grander deal about FD, which is this elegant ball that brings everybody together from this high social plateau. And it's this great tradition at the school that, I mean, certainly not as great a tradition as the honor code, but it is nevertheless, I think, the greatest social tradition the school has. And one that I think would be, I think it'd be a tragedy to see it, you know, to see it die out or replaced or diminished in strength. But, it's really a marvelous event with an excellent opportunity for everybody to come together. And when I look back on the time I spent at WNL, the stuff I, you know, did and the opportunities I had at FD, and the chance I got to work with different people on this and that, and the creativity that, you know, it's just this wide open, you know, space for creativity. You know, there's nothing like it in terms of the committee just build this thing. And you know, you kind of build it and they will come kind of thing. It's just fabulous. And when I look back on my years at WNL, that is, FD is you know, is it. That's what I think about. You know, FD, I mean, I guess I lived and breathed it kind of for a while, and I love it. And I love thinking about it, and I love remembering about it. And I go home every now and again, you know, back to the folks' place, and I dig through the stuff, and I can spend time just looking through there, reading old newspaper clippings about it, and reading old playbills and stuff like that. And it's just an amazing event, and I'm really lucky that I had an opportunity to get involved. I'm really pleased that I could make a contribution, and it was great for me to come back this year. And I'm really pleased that they were able to, you know, let me get in there and play around a little bit. And this was a great, great experience for me then and now, and something that I really have no regrets about. Something that I love.
Well, my last question is, do all of you who work so hard on it, are you so exhausted by the time the ball happens that you can't enjoy yourself?
Well,
I worry about that.
Yeah, that big push, because we get the gym on Tuesday, like Tuesday at noon or Tuesday morning or something, we get the gym, and everything's kind of been put together elsewhere, but still you have to bring it all together and assemble it. And it's this massive push. And we used to work like 16 hours a day, Tuesday and Wednesday, to try to get it put together so we could, you know, not work so hard on Thursdays and Fridays. But still, Leo and I and the other people, we joke about how we were running out of there with our toolbox on our arms and people were coming in with tuxes. And that's a slight exaggeration, but not too bad, because some days before that ball, I didn't get out of that gym until 5 or 6 o'clock on Friday night, you know, and my date's already dressed and waiting for me, and I'm sweaty and got sawdust all over me and I'm beat. But no, there's just, we were beat at the end of that week, and I think everybody was beat, but there's just such that adrenaline rush from going to the ball that, you know, you don't dare miss it, you know. So that is a problem, but man, somewhere inside all of us, we always seem to find that reserve for those, you know, 8 hours of going to dinner and hanging out and going to the ball, or 6 hours or whatever it takes. It's just, you know, and then we just go home and sleep till about Thursday of the next week. But
what happens to classes through all this?
Ooh.
A minor question, of course.
Yeah, right. Well, most people, it doesn't have much effect. And for me, I missed some classes that week, but I remember being in some classes that week, and just, as a matter of fact, now I have a TA, and so I have these students at University of New Hampshire, where I'm in graduate school, that I teach these labs to for introductory geology, and I remember I was looking through some of my old notes, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and I came to the week of FD, and these notes, and they're just pitiful, they're just terrible. I mean, I was in class, but I was just dozing off, you know, you could see the words just kind of start off on the left side and they just kind of drop off to the line by the right side. I mean, physically, because I was just not capable of. So I missed a few classes, but my professors were pretty. One of my professors let me reschedule a test once because he said, you know, I know. I said, well, there was like a deadline for the test, and I said, you know, can I take it just outside the deadline? He's like, look, I know what you got to do. You just take it next week. Another one of my professors, my senior year, I missed his class on Friday, and he told his class, he said, well, he said, Mr. Frampton's not here with us today, but we'll excuse him because he's in the ball preparing for FD, and you know, and so, you know, they let you cut a few corners for it. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, class is what we're here for, but it doesn't kill anybody to miss one or two here and there. So academics might have suffered a little bit, but in the long run, that GPA is just a little number, but FD is this flood of, you know, this flood of memories that I have that I wouldn't trade for, you know, any kind of grade change in the thing. And even it didn't really make that big a difference anyway.
Yeah. That's a great quote to end on, Joe. I can't imagine anything better.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I hope I can help you out.
This has been great. You've set a high standard for Melissa.
I'm sure she'll match. I'm sure she'll match just as well.
Well,
but the only thing is, I've had 2 years to sit back and kind of let all this stuff mold together, and you know, and see the forest instead of looking at all the trees. And so she'll probably give you more nuts and bolts aspect of it.
But. Well, yeah, I usually don't interview many students because I want them to have a little perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too irresistible to talk to her
right
coming off of it.
Yeah.
And she may be just totally out there, but I'd like to try.
No, I understand.
But you're a wonderful example of getting a little perspective on you.
Well, I thank you. I'm glad to have the opportunity, and I hope to read about some of the good stuff in the book.
I think you will.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you, Joe.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.